This episode is brought to you by America's Rehab Campus. Get on the road to recovery with the best rehab in beautiful Arizona. Dial 1-833-272-7342. That's 1-833-ARC-REHAB.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are now tuned in to the Armchair.
All right, so good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of the ArtCast. My name is Buddha.
And I'm Michaela.
We're here again today. Michaela's awesome. She's been a trooper calling in today on the phone. You know, just such a beautiful day of hearing testimonies and just living in purpose, man. This has been such a beautiful, beautiful opportunity. Once again, shout out to all the listeners, everyone out there. Today, though, man, I want you guys to strap up. I want you guys to get ready because we're bringing you a homegirl of mine. I've known her for a long time. I know her husband. I mean, this girl is very, very special to me, and I'm very grateful that she's here right now to share her testimony. Ladies and gentlemen, give a huge round of applause to Miss Katie. Woo, woo, woo. See? That's a full audience right there, dude.
Full audience. Thank you so much for the welcome.
Thank you so much, man, for coming through. We've known each other for quite a bit, dude.
Yeah.
When was the first, what year was it when you came here?
So I was here in 2018.
2018.
2018, yeah. So my clean date is October 6th, 2018.
Wow.
So that's when I entered into ARC. And yeah, you were a tech at the time.
Yeah.
You were leading groups. That's, I remember. Yeah, you'd led some groups and then you were a tech on the floor.
Man, 2018. That's OG. That was OG ARC. That's before COVID. That's when we had hot dogs, like whenever you wanted.
In the kitchen at night. There were pretzels, there were hot dogs, there was fruit. You could have it. Watch TV at night and have your fruit and your hot dogs. Yeah.
How many people did we have in residential at that time? Do you remember?
I mean, it had to have been 20. It was around 20.
Total?
Maybe 30. But no more.
That was total?
Yeah.
Holy moly.
Yeah. That's one group size now.
Dang. Michaela, do you know how many we have in res right now?
Not off the top of my head, but a lot more, I think.
It's probably like close to over 100. Most, and that's not even including IOP.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I'm not sure what the census is right now, but whenever I was talking to one of the techs, they had 60 males, I believe. So anyways, I don't know the exact numbers, but yeah, it's definitely grown, you know, tripled, exponential growth.
That's super cool, man. So, you know, I don't know if you've ever had an opportunity to listen to some of the episodes, but we typically come in and we kind of just talk about from the beginning, like where you were from, you know, things like that. Like we said, we got to meet each other in 2018, but I don't know anything about your life before that. Are you from Tucson, Arizona?
So I'm not from Tucson.
Okay. No.
So I'm from Arizona. I grew up in Cochise County, so where I was born, where I was raised, was in Palominas.
All right.
And I like to mention it just because it's such a huge part of who I am and how I was raised, and those childhood years are so developmental.
Yeah.
And that's just where I really got my roots and who I am, you know, the good, the bad, all the things in between. Like, that's my home base.
And did you have both of your parents growing up?
So I did not. I grew up in Palominas and my parents separated. I was maybe, I'll say five.
Five.
And since then, after that, I didn't see my dad. My dad wasn't in my life.
Okay.
So I grew up in Palominas, but then moved to Sierra Vista. And that's like where all of my using happened, is in Sierra Vista. So my parents separated. My mom remarried when I was about 12.
Okay.
And so she remarried and I lived with my stepdad up until about 18 or 19 and my mom and my brother.
Okay. So you did have your parents initially, and then when they divorced is when everything started changing for you.
Yeah.
And did you have any siblings growing up?
Yeah. So I grew up with my brother and I was kind of, you know, as coming into the day, and I have listened to the other podcasts and thinking about just kind of how they go and things I've heard other people share. And so my brother's not with us anymore, and it's something that I've come to accept just like as fact now. Mm-hmm. So my brother completed suicide in 2016. Okay. And that's just something that I really wasn't able to deal with for a long time.
Yeah.
I went to his funeral and I was high and I was not okay.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And over the years, just trying to remember to like acknowledge his life. Yeah. Because for so many years, I just ignored what was happening and the reality of it. And even just recently, even in the last couple of months, I've really come to terms with like, that's what happened.
Yeah.
And wanting to be an advocate and being somebody, especially with the clients, that they can talk about it. They can talk about it for themselves. They can talk about it with, you know, others if it's happened to somebody that they know. Mm-hmm. And it's actually, I haven't really talked to anybody else about it, but wanting to have some sort of some kind of suicide prevention.
Yeah, absolutely. Here,
whether it's a group or it's just a resource or it's just drop in the hat that, you know, we're just as a team kind of just bringing up in the recognition of suicide.
Man, you know, Katie, first of all, so sorry for your loss, my friend. You know, I know it's not easy to deal with, you know, since working here, we've experienced suicide from former clients that were still struggling, and we've also experienced it from employees as well. You know, so it kind of shows how prevalent it is, and regardless of what side of the fence you're on, we all struggle with something, you know? So I completely agree 100% that yes, there should be some sort of a prevention. And maybe you could bring that here in the future, you know? But, you know, I'm so sorry for everything that you've had to experience with that, and I know there's a lot of people in this world that are struggling with the exact same type of thing, you know?
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being an advocate for it and for shedding light on something that most people consider taboo to talk about.
I'm very, very sorry to hear about your loss. And thank you for being so transparent about that, because I lost someone very recently to suicide. And I don't think it's talked enough about. Like, there's almost a stigma that goes with it when you know someone that has committed suicide, and efforts to bring awareness to that, I think is very needed in our world that we live in.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing. And it's just a pain that's like not, it doesn't heal. It's for me, it's always just like a hole. It's like a gap, and the guilt and the questions of if I could have had a different impact.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Going back to, you know, when you were saying you were about 5 years old when your parents separated, right? You moved to Sierra Vista, right? How was that at this time living with your stepdad and your mom? Did you guys, why did they divorce in the first place, your mom and dad? Was it?
Yeah. So growing up, both of my parents were alcoholic for sure. So I did not grow up in a sober home and definitely caused, you know, some trauma and some unsupervision and some, you know, bad things happen when children are not supervised, you know, whether it just be getting in trouble or sexual trauma or all these other things that can happen. So yeah, just most of my life growing up, I was just always okay. And so nobody really paid attention to me too much because I didn't really get in trouble and I just kind of like went with the flow. So I really didn't, I didn't really need supervision, but children need supervision.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So my parents were, they separated at that time, and I really didn't see my dad again until I was like 18.
So you're moving out there, you know, you're still a young person. Even though you're young, you know, you don't really have like a really good set of friends or anything, and like 5 years old or whatever, it still impacts you having to leave everything that, you know, you knew up until 5 years old. Was... How was your life after that when you guys finally moved to Sierra Vista?
Yeah. So my stepdad is actually somebody that I've known my entire life. Mm-hmm. And he was a part of the family pretty much already. And so once my parents separated, my mom was really struggling financially. And his wife had just passed away from cancer. I believe it was breast cancer. So his wife passed away, and I don't know. He honestly came to my mom and said that he wanted to take care of her and take care of us. And they got married and we lived pretty comfortably from that point forward. And I was safe and my mom was able to be a lot more present at that time. So they married when I was probably about 11 or 12.
Okay.
So they married at that time. And after that, my mom was able to be like more engaged. She wasn't sole, you know, financial provider, and I'm pretty sure that her drinking decreased at that time as well. So yeah, she was more available to me during those years.
And so like, what was, you know, how were you in school once you guys got settled, like with your academics? Were you doing well in school? Were you a good student? Student? I said, student, the hell's a student? Student. Were you a good student, Katie?
So I was a good student as far as like a natural ability and like a care to turn in my assignments and things like that. But I never had the structure or the push or the drive to, you know, I'll put it on myself, like the drive and the know-how. Like I didn't know why it was important to get good grades. I didn't have a plan of going to college, or I didn't really have any plan. Like I just never had long-term goals at that time.
Yeah.
So I did decent as far as, you know, just being able to pay attention and pass my courses and things like that. But I never, I feel like I was never talked to.
Like the encouragement.
Yeah. Like, hey, get good grades. You could go to a good college. Like, you know, you can be something. You have, you know, you have the ability and you're worth living a productive life. So get these things in order and do what you need to do that.
Yeah.
So like I said, I was just kind of left to my own devices. And yeah, I ended up using drugs.
How old were you?
When I started using?
When you first started.
So I started, like, the first time I tried marijuana, I was like 15. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't start using hard drugs. I was like 18 or 19. Yeah.
Did you become a pothead when you first started?
Yeah, I was a stoner.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I had a lot of fun. I'm not even going to like say that like I didn't.
It is what it is.
You know, it was I enjoyed doing that. Looking back, you know, I don't know. I don't know if I would change that time. I would just change my focus for sure.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if I had any extracurricular activities or if I had like just something or like a long-term goal, you know, mm-hmm. like go to, you know, graduate high school, go to college, like live your life kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I just got kind of taken off track, like, you know, started smoking weed, going to parties, not focusing, you know, staying out too late, you know, up to whatever I wanted to do. So that happened, you know, through my high school years. And then I started having some trouble like my sophomore year. Uh-huh. So this is a short amount of time, right? Between my freshman and my sophomore year. So I started having some trouble with people at school, with some girls at school. And I decided to graduate a year early. Yeah. So I did like an extra program and I graduated a year early from high school.
And well, if you don't mind me asking, I mean, we don't have to go into it, but what were you experiencing in school that you felt to take that measure?
Yeah. So it was some bullying. Okay. And yeah, so like bullying and, you know, really I was putting myself in bad situations and like having drama and repercussions. And it was just kind of like, you know, let me just get out of here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Which, I mean, it has its benefits, you know, like I did go to college after, so I did go to a community college. Yeah. So I did like have that academic focus.
Uh-huh.
But there was just never like a long-term goal. Like if I feel like if I would have had a goal, like, okay, complete this and like get a job. Like, and that's even still like to this day, like I'm kind of focused on the present moment and not really looking forward to the future and like, okay, if I do A, B, and C, then these will be the results.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And were you in trouble with the law at all? Like during this time?
No.
No.
Nope. Let's see. I think I might have gotten arrested in high school. Yeah, so there were a couple of things. So whenever I was like 15 or 16, I got caught stealing. Mm-hmm. And then after that, there was a minor in consumption at a party.
Oh, man.
So, you know, so there were a couple things.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't end up finishing early, but I had the opportunity to finish early in school. But instead of graduating a year early, I had the option to graduate 2 years early because of just some things that happened when I moved from North Carolina to Arizona. And it's interesting to hear the other side because I wanted to graduate early, but my parents wouldn't let me. So I stayed and I did those 2 more years.
All right. I wish I could have been able to do that. But
at what point in when you were using, did it become like a hindrance to you? Did it get in your way?
So it's interesting because for me, so I've been clean for a couple of years now and, I've shared my story and I've done a lot of like reflection on it. Right. So I can almost like, you know, center my like turning point into like these couple of sentences, right? Like, this is the moment and this is what happened and like these things. Mm-hmm. Just because that's just kind of how it was. So what happened is that, so I was partying already and I was actually at a party. So I met a guy and he started bringing around Percocet when they were real Percocet, real blues.
Yeah.
Right? Like Perc 30s. And so we started using those. And then shortly after, I didn't know that he was a heroin addict and he had just recently relapsed. And so whenever we were using the pills and he didn't, like, if you're a heroin addict, you're not going to continue using Perc 30s for very long. So he went out, he picked up some heroin. He is an IV drug user. And yeah, he introduced that to me.
Wow.
So the first time that I tried heroin was intravenously with a needle.
And how old were you at this point?
I had to have been, I might have been 19.
19 years old.
Yeah. And I remember, so whenever I first did that, my first thought, like, I don't even think that the drugs had fully hit me. And I was, my thought was exactly, this is going to be bad.
Oh, wow.
And it was 7 years.
7 years. And how was the relationship with your parents at this time? Like, as you started declining and doing more and more and more, were they aware that you were using?
I couldn't even really tell you. They had to have known.
Yeah.
I couldn't really tell you because at that point, I mean, I appeared, right? How I always have appeared to be self-sufficient. So at that time, I was still going to college. I was still I was still going to school. And it was a pretty quick snowball from smoking blues to shooting heroin. And I mean, less than 6 months, it could have been 3 months. It was a very, very short amount of time. And I just feel like it was all just kind of like stacked like against me. And so for me, something that I really always lean into is like my higher power. And I don't know, it might sound strange, but I've kind of like, I don't know, maybe come up with a theory to like make, you know, to have myself make it make sense. But just how quick I went from like smoking blues to shooting heroin to then like being on this long journey of using. It's like, just for me in my life's experience, I'm like, there has to be a way, like a reason that I chose, like, I feel like I chose this for this lifetime, for this experience. Like, I made that choice because I know that I made that choice, but just to go as deep as I did and as dark as I went, to be able to return to the light and be able to like share my experience and hopefully be able to help people in this.
Amen.
Do you feel like when you were in college, like there was anybody around you that was like picking up on that quick change, or was everybody around you kind of also in on those quick changes?
So I never felt like I had like a really big social circle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, honestly, it almost made me have to ask my mom, like, did you notice like what was happening, or was she not paying attention? Was I hiding it? You know, I'd really have to ask, because there was nobody that said like, hey, are you okay? Like, what's happening? Maybe that guy's not good for you. Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
You know? And it's kind of like been like that my whole life. Like, I don't, just like even for my brother, like, I don't, like, I didn't get stopped. I didn't get asked these questions. And not that people didn't care. I don't know what it was. I don't know if they didn't know or they didn't know how to approach the situation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or you always just look like you have everything in check and taken care of and you're good.
Yeah.
You know, maybe. I mean, I only say that because I mean, I see you, you know, at the facility and honestly, dude, you always look like you're in a good mood. You always look happy. You know what I'm saying? But it's like the Robin Williams thing, right? Where they say like, always check on those people that are very out, like up and positive and stuff. Those are sometimes the people who need that the most.
Mm-hmm. You know? A little check-in.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
So 7 years with this person, you know, I'm listening to what you said about how you chose this. You know, I feel like sometimes the enemy comes in different types of forms, right? Through people, through experiences, through different things like that. 7 years, were you living with this gentleman? Was this like, you know, what was your life like? Did you drop out of college?
Yeah, so I wasn't with him the whole 7 years of my addiction, but for a good 3 or 4.
Yeah.
Yeah, we really, I mean, you know, we were together and So yeah, I dropped out of college like shortly after. I just remember like being sick and not being able to go to my classes and eventually like just pretty much quit showing up.
Yeah.
So I was using my stepdad's VA benefits at the time. And because I basically like took the money because they would give me some money every month, I stopped going to classes and I owed them money. And I think my last year I went to college was in 2013.
Okay.
And they continued to take my tax returns year after year. So I think this year, because I wasn't working, so there was nothing to take.
Yeah.
But I think this year I finally paid off that debt.
Oh, good for you. That's got to feel good, dude. Yeah. Oh, man.
Oh, God. Yeah. I mean, it'll be great to hopefully get a tax return next year.
I hope you get a fat ass return, bro. Like something cool. Fat. Like, that'd be so cool.
Yeah.
But, man.
So what is that? So that's 10 years. 10 years later.
Yeah.
You know, and these things in recovery still, it just takes time. And that's what I think is so difficult in recovery in general, and especially early recovery. So not being able to get the things that we want right away, understanding that repairing all of the damage takes time, and being able to stay clean long enough to see that start to happen, to start to see the turnaround and say, my credit score has improved. Oh, I haven't been arrested in this many years. And to start seeing those things turn around and actually have impact. It takes years to get off of probation.
Yeah.
So these things take time.
3 years. So where were you, Miss Katie went, like, where were you in your life when you decided that you wanted to come into treatment? Was the ARC your very first place?
No.
No.
So ARC is the third place that I was at.
Okay.
And the last. So, man, there were quite a few times that I had gone to detox. That was like, you know, I remember my mom taking me quite a few times. Because once, you know, I was totally off my rocker, then you get people's attention. Like, yeah. Okay, now she's fucked up. Like, now yeah. Something's wrong. But yeah, so I went to multiple detoxes. I'd gone to Tucson. I'd gone to, you know, some places, a place in Benson and things like that. So, and I just never could make it through. I couldn't make it through the withdrawal. I couldn't. Yeah, that was it. I didn't have the desire enough to stick through the withdrawal and the craze. So what my brain was telling me was I need the drugs. I need them. I can't stop. And yeah, and just the thrill of getting high outweighed every time for me to stay in detox. So it was actually probation. So I got arrested in, it was 2017. So I got arrested in 2017. And it's just crazy, chaotic kind of story as to why I was arrested. So I was in jail for 71 days. And at this point, so I was using meth and heroin. So mental health also runs in my family.
Yeah.
And the chemicals in my brain were just really messed up. So I was hallucinating and I was, you know, hearing voices and all these things. And I must have been suicidal because at this time, I mean, I just really not okay. As far as like the detox, so I detoxed in jail. And then whenever I was there, like, yeah, I was just not a safe person. And so I had to go to the behavioral health centers. So I was in jail in Cochise County and they transported me up to Tucson to go to behavioral health centers to try and get me leveled. So I was in jail for 71 days. And once I was released, in Bisbee. It's called the Women's Transition Project, the mm-hmm. WTP. And so I was there and I did their 90-day program. And from there, I was able to get housing. So I got housing and I moved to Sierra Vista. And I was on probation at the time. And so I stayed clean for like a little while, but I just started using again. And I can't really remember like then, like what it was I started using, like why I started using. I don't know if it was like, it's just habit.
Yeah.
Stopping using is really hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just really hard. And I didn't start shooting up heroin again, but I started like smoking. And yeah, I just relapsed for a couple of months. So a short little bit of time. And then I went, my probation officer, she sent me to The Haven up in Tucson.
Okay.
So that is whenever I moved to Tucson. So 2018.
Okay.
Is when I moved to Tucson. Oh, no, sorry. It was actually, so I got arrested in January of 2017. I stayed clean for quite a few months, maybe like 9 months or something. And then I started using again. And in November of 2017, she sent me to The Haven in Tucson. So that's whenever I left Sierra Vista and moved to Tucson. You know, and I don't know, I'm going to be vulnerable and I'm going to share it just because of like what we're going through, like as a country and things like that. And what happened, so whenever we first started using heroin, so what happened is that the guy that I was with, I got pregnant. So I got pregnant the first time that we were together. I got pregnant and I didn't want to keep it. And I remember going to my mom and telling her, like, you know, that I was going to have an abortion. And so once he and I did that, so we had the abortion, and then he started using right after. He like relapsed at that time.
Wow.
Is what happened.
Okay.
So right after that is whenever he relapsed, and then we started using the blues, and then shortly after it was the heroin.
Okay.
And I just want to share, I just want to be vulnerable about it, but the more important thing, honestly, is just what's happening in our country. And it just really, it breaks my heart. And, you know, I'm sure that there's more that like I could be doing. I just am a firm believer that women should be able to make their own choices.
Absolutely.
Because what if, you know, I had had that child and still started using heroin? And then like, I have a 3.5-year-old now, and I think about who I was while I was using. And if I was that person to my child now, like, I would really not feel good about myself.
Yeah.
To be that person in my act of addiction towards my son, like that would suck. And I'm just really grateful that that part of my story is the way that it is, because I don't know what would have happened if I started using heroin. Like, what if the order of events is just a little bit different?
Yeah.
And like, you know, I had my son and, you know, I treated him how I know I would have treated him if I even got to keep him.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so yeah, I just, that's definitely part of my story. And I just, you know, I'm grateful that I have my son now, and that, you know, I'm able to be there for him and I'm able to be present and provide him like a good life. And I also learned so many things from my using and who, or like from my life growing up, like yeah. with, you know, the absentee of parents. And wanting to show my son something different, you know.
Yeah, and thank you for being vulnerable with that, because that's something that's very hard to share, but it's part of your story. So with what you're going through and where you're at now, that's something that I'm sure you're able to relate to certain clients with. And yeah. being able to be vulnerable and share that, or share, you know, just where every part of your story is, in my mind, like for anybody, is a vulnerability thing. And I think that if we all were a little bit more vulnerable, we would be in a better place, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I admire your strength and the fact that you are willing to stand up for what you believe in and things, you know, like I was talking in the last podcast, my mom never had a voice growing up. She was never allowed to make her own decisions. And that's one thing that my mom has always told me, is like, when you have a baby girl, you make sure that you allow her to be independent and you allow her to do what she needs to do, and you let her have an opinion and say what she needs to say. So to me, it's a very admirable trait, and I'm glad that you're an advocate, and I'm glad that you stand up. You're like a warrior, dude. That's what it is. You know what I'm saying?
Thank you. Yeah.
7 years being, you know, in this lifestyle, dealing, you know, feeling horrible, just digging yourself deeper and deeper into this addiction. I know you said that we were the third place that you came at and you finally got treatment, but what was the moment? Like, do you remember that moment specifically where you realized that you wanted to get clean and like you changed your life?
So the moment that was whenever I was at the WTP in Bisbee, and I just like woke up one day and I didn't have the desire to use. I wasn't sick. I didn't have the obsession to use, and they gave us a lot of responsibility there, and I just felt alive for the first time.
Wow.
And I was so grateful that the drugs were out of my system and I was able to wake up and actually like feel good. So that was my moment.
And you've always had faith, right? You've always believed in God. So did you feel like he touched you at that time? Like, did it feel like it was a God thing?
Yeah. So I definitely, so my like spiritual experiences with like religion and things have been like this ongoing thing, and it's always been developing. It's always been changing. So, yeah, I definitely had like a very close relationship with Jesus at the time. And yeah, definitely felt connected. And even through like some of my like psychotic experiences, in a lot of ways they were like kind of spiritual, and it's part of why I have like the spiritual beliefs that I have, because in hearing voices, that stuff is so real. It seems so real that there's just like no comparison. And it, yeah, for me, it was almost like, you know, this is like a spiritual experience, even though it was mostly negative for a long time. It's really turned on its head now.
It makes perfect sense to me. I mean, who was the pastor we're talking about? There was a pastor who was talking about the man in the graveyard in the Bible. There's a story, and I don't know exactly where it's at, but that he's like yelling and he's screaming because he hears these voices in his head and all these things. And the pastor was talking about how a lot of the things that we experience now that we just normalize are things that they talked about in the Bible, like possessions. And for me, I feel like if there is a battle of the spirit, which there is, right? If there's a heaven, if there's a hell, and this evil and this good come together and they go toe to toe, it would make sense that, you know, the devil would be throwing voices and things at you. And also God would be throwing angels and things at you too. You know, I mean, it's like, it's a fight for your soul.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was spiritual warfare.
Spiritual warfare.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. My entire using was a trip, because I just felt at one point like my soul had like power and, how do I say it? Like worth, mm-hmm, and that people that were using were like trying to like take my worth. And it was like something that they were trying to like take from me, mm-hmm, in my using. And ultimately though, right, like I was like, I feel like this is happening, but it can't be happening because like my spirit is whole. Like I am complete. I am one. Like it can't be taken from me. Like it was given to me by God, and like it's mine, yeah, and it can't be taken by anybody else. So, but yeah, definitely spiritual warfare happening out
there.
That's
grace though, man. I mean, because I think that thought that you had of like, it's mine, is such an important thought to have, because I see people who lose their souls and they lose themselves. Like it's very easy. It happens very easily, dude. Like, I mean, so much, especially now, like with the fentanyl epidemic, like, mm-hmm, it's robbing people of their souls.
Of everything.
And how beautiful that you've always held on, even at your darkest points in your life. It's like, I'm still holding on to, this is mine. You're not taking this shit from me. This is my soul. You know what I mean? God gave this to me.
God gave it. It's, yeah. Like, I mean, it's mine. Like I was given it, but you know, I'm one with the creator.
Warrior, dude, I'm telling yeah, you.
So like I have very, I don't even know if they're different. So my spiritual progress has been interesting. Like I said, so growing up, I had like some really strange, like spiritual experiences.
Yeah.
And, yeah, but still like always involved with the church. And like what I like to say now, like I feel like I know Jesus, like Jesus is a friend of mine. I just also feel like,
shout out to Jesus.
So he totally came and did like what we all like have been told that he did, like that absolutely happened just for me. I feel like there are other like spiritual beings that are like also helping and guiding, and even just our planet as a whole, mm-hmm, like what's happening right now. Like, yes, a lot of it seems very dark. But individually, like whenever I speak to any individuals, the light is rising and we're finding ways to like connect.
Dude, I see that. We were just talking about that. It seems like more people, ever since COVID, maybe it's COVID that changed a lot of it, but I feel like we're having more conversations about faith. People who never, who had experienced, you know, spiritual trauma or, you know, anything, like people are more talking about him, and I'm hearing people just speak openly more about him, and it's like a movement, like more people.
Yeah, it's like the Great Awakening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing. So yes, you walk into the gates of ARC, right? Or the doors, there's no gates, but you walked into the doors. At this time, there was no gates. It was very open, right? At this point, you had come back from the other place, so you were already certain that you did not want to use again? Is that what I was getting from your story?
Okay, so I had that moment of like, oh my gosh, I'm clean. I want to be clean. Like I wanted to live clean without drugs, but I didn't know what that meant. Like I didn't know the work that it takes to have a life. I didn't know. So honestly, this is the first Monday through Friday job I have ever had that like 40 hours a week.
That's crazy. That's cool though.
Yeah. And so I'm 30.
Okay.
And so whenever I started as an RSS, like that was my first Monday through Friday full-time job ever.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Ever. Well, okay. I've worked other like full-time jobs like here and there, but whenever I was like 19, that was like my, and right before I started using. So I, you know, kind of had my life together. I was working. I just bought my car off the lot. I bought a brand new car, which I still have today. It's still hanging in there.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. And so I started using while I was working at Dillard's. And then, yeah, so from 19 to 30, right? That's a freaking decade. That is a whole ass decade.
Yeah, well, that adds up perfectly. 10 years of them taking your tax returns. That's a decade, bro.
Yes, a decade. And like, that's kind of what I want to get across. Like, these things do not, like, life doesn't get back in order the day that I stop using. It doesn't even get in order years after I stop using, because there's so much trauma and damage and fines and probation or, you know, family damages. These things take so much time to recover, to get back in order. Like, it just doesn't happen overnight. And like, if I could say anything to anyone, it would just like, be patient. Don't use just for today, right? Like, if you want to use tomorrow, you can tell yourself you can use tomorrow, but whenever tomorrow comes, you're not going to use just for today. Yeah. And like, that's what works. Not putting drugs in my body is the only solution that I have. So for me, like, I live a completely abstinent life. So I do not use any kind of mind or mood altering substances. So no alcohol, no marijuana, no anything. And that's just how I choose to live. I feel like that is how I'm going to be able to reach like my maximum capacity, right? And like actually reach my potential. And in some ways, it's kind of like this victim role of like, nobody taught me and nobody showed me. And I've had to learn a lot once I've grown up. And I've been given the gift to have stopped using drugs and be able to get my life in order and provide for my son and provide for myself and have a future, because like that wasn't something that I was taught. It wasn't anything that was handed to me. And it's taken a long time to come around and say, okay, I'm finally like, you know, in control. I'm in the driver's seat. I have power of choice today and I can move forward in the way that like I want to. And I didn't have that my whole life. Like, you know, I'm 30 years old and like, I feel like I'm just learning so much now about life. And maybe that's just like a regular kind of maturity thing where, you know, that's just kind of what happens. But yeah,
falling into purpose as well. I mean, you're like you said, I mean, it's just like these are things that you chose. And I know, you know, I want to go into this a little bit, but I mean, looking at your life now, knowing who your husband is and things like that, I mean, you would have never met him had you not been here.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And now you get to use your experiences every day to help other people and to help them get out of that darkness that they may be living in, you know? So, so you came to ARC, went through the groups. You've been sober for 3.5 years now.
It's a little over, it's like 4.5.
4.5 years. Yeah. Wow.
And ARC, sorry to cut you off, but ARC in 2018 is not ARC today.
It's not today.
So my IOP, like I lived, you know, on the other side. So like the males were right up here, right above us.
Yeah.
And then on the other side were all the females.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we were all still housed together. And we could leave if we wanted to. We could go sign out.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Uh-huh. And come back. Yeah.
Man, yeah.
That's different.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was a completely different time back then. But it's always had the fellowship, like the people that were here. I mean, it's never been short of amazing souls and you know, that same battle of the spirit. I mean, you get to see people at their most vulnerable, and when they're at their most vulnerable, they tend to be more open, and you can really see that spirit in them that's fighting, you know. And it's beautiful just to see your growth. I remember after you left, you know, I mean, now it's thousands of clients a year that we see, but after you left, it's like, oh, I wonder how she's doing or whatever. My wife and I were at Zion City, right? And I remember, I didn't even, were you guys dating at the time, you and your husband? Like when you were here, you guys were dating?
Oh, no. So, and I always want to be clear, right?
Okay.
So we were not dating here. we started dating shortly after we left.
Okay.
Right. So we met, we kind of like chit chatted. We just didn't really connect. And then we met at like the Alcathon or something and then kind of started hanging out. And that was that.
That's crazy. Yeah. And how long have you been married now?
So 4 years.
Woo.
Yeah. So I got clean in eight.
One more time. I'm giving you one more time. Sorry. I love using this. My favorite button.
There you go.
Gotta press it all the time, man.
Thank you. Thank you.
So you got married when?
So we're not officially married, but we might as well be.
Yeah, might as
well. Yeah, we might as well be. Yeah. Married. I mean, yeah, we're married. Yeah. So in January. So we got together in January of 2019.
Okay.
Yeah. And then we saw you shortly after there at Zion City.
It's amazing how God works. I'm going to call him your husband. Your husband, he knew people in my family. We were able to make some amazing connections and stuff. So it's been a beautiful thing. And then seeing you come into these, you know, now there's gates here. You know what I mean? We didn't have gates in 2018, but now we're fast forwarding a couple years, right? So like seeing you come here and start working here, how was that experience for you? Like knowing that you get to do that all the time?
Yeah. So I mean, it's great. It was like a couple of years, like that difference, you know, there's a couple of years of difference whenever I left and then I came back. But yeah, it's been great. I mean, the clients really enjoy whenever a person says like, yes, I'm in recovery. Oh, did you go here? Yeah, I came through here. And I think it really inspires a lot of hope.
Yeah.
And they really like, they just like hearing that. They like seeing people making it happen and doing it. Mm-hmm. And it's been really cool. So a lot of them have like watched my experience. So I've had a great experience at ARC as an employee. And we had been talking about this podcast for quite a while and I kept pushing it off, right? I kept being like, no, like I'm not ready. It's not this, it's not that. And I knew there was a reason that I wanted to wait. And I just think it's really interesting. So I started as a BHT in residential and that was in June. So in June, it'll be a year that I've been here. And then, I got my RSS certification and started working in IOP as an RSS. And now I'm a coordinator for IOP.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in just, you know, in just under a year, I've really made, it's been life-changing.
Yeah.
Right? It has been a life-changing experience, even working here and being able to just work hard and do what I need to do and learn about this place. And I really like, I value myself and I pride myself on working like so many different areas of ARC and just having that experience to really be able to connect with the clients. And I'm just proud of myself. I'm like,
should be
proud of seeing this place from like the ins and the outs and all the different perspectives and knowing that like there is opportunity and it just takes like, you know, hard work and doing the right thing and always trying my best.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
That's all you can do too is, you know, just when, if you give it your best every day, you'll get a little bit better each day, you know? And I think some people's, I think it's been a common thing you've shared of like, you get clean and you think it's all going to be better at the end. And it's not, even if you aren't clean and you're not an addict or a former addict and you're not in recovery, but you're gotten yourself into circumstances in life that you've got to handle. It's not an overnight fix. Like it takes work. It takes showing up for yourself every day and just striving to be better just a little bit more each day instead of pushing yourself thinking that I've just got to fix it all right now.
Yeah. Cause right now can't all happen. Like that's just not how like life works. And it's really just a beautiful thing to have the accomplishments and, you know, work on one small thing and learn like, oh, maybe that wasn't so hard, and then be able to do something different that also causes me to feel like self-esteem.
Yeah.
So self-esteem is so important in recovery and having purpose and a place and just reason for being alive and finding a community. That's why, so I go to NA meetings, and that's been something that's been really important for me is to have a community, because in adult life, if I'm already not connected, where am I going to go to find like connections? And NA is like somewhere, or AA, that a person can go to find those connections. Because like what I've seen in like helping clients and helping them learn about like themselves in recovery is like self-esteem is so important. Having a place of belonging. Those two main things, getting rid of shame and guilt, like those two things, because shame and guilt is like what would have kept me using. So that's why. So like vulnerability and being completely honest, like whenever I got clean and I realized I had to be honest, I just started being real honest with everybody about everything, because it like was, it was cleansing, and it was, I was able to just like get these things off of me and I didn't have to carry them around anymore.
Yeah. Somebody said something to me recently, and she had said, you know, the shame and guilt that you get from using, just like how you said, is the same, you know, that keeps you in it. And she's like, you know, for anybody who's using, she's like, I try and tell them, you know, God wants to be with you in even your darkest moments. So if you feel like you want to be delivered from something, ask God to come into your life, even in those dark moments, and get rid of that shame and that guilt. Because if you cry out to God and you really, you know, pray for him to deliver you from whatever that is, you know, that's a very important thing. So to me, I loved hearing you say that, because, you know, shame and guilt, a lot of us have that shame and that guilt. We're not good enough. We're never going to be, you know what I'm saying? And we have to get rid of that. It's just, it all plays a part on taking.
Yeah.
Like how you said, taking that soul a little bit at a time.
Yeah. A little bit at a time. And if, you know, I have to take back my power and knowing that, like, I am good enough. We all are like good enough, seriously. Like, and just like you were saying, like, God knows all of my secrets. God knows who I am, and God knows like who I have the potential to be. Mm-hmm. And then that did remind me. So whenever I first, because I also went to the Haven, so that was the second spot that I went to before I came here. And I relapsed there for really just like 2-ish weeks. And then I came to ARC. So whenever I went up here, I was in the IOP program there, and these girls, it was Victory at the time. And these girls, we went to, you know, this church, and we had such an amazing time. And I was like, man, you know, I really think I need some of that in my life. And so I started going to Zion City, and yeah, it was life-changing. It really was too. Like, I needed that connection with God. I needed that connection with a higher power. Like, I needed something to like just make me feel really good, like drugs did, right? Drugs had their purpose. Like, they made me feel really good and made me forget about all my problems. And what I find now, though, like, there is for me like so much joy and possibilities that I can still have these really great raw experiences while I'm not using drugs.
Yeah.
And those are like better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Being clean and sober and having real experiences of all varieties, right? All experiences, all emotions, all of those things. Like, I'm willing to walk through those now because I know what, like, I tried to keep away from was those experiences by using drugs. And I really, you know, I handicapped myself. Yeah. I really harmed myself by using drugs, and I've learned a lot, but I would never do it again.
Man, what advice, Katie, would you give somebody, you know, who's out there, you know, that may be still lost in their addiction, listens to this and feels like there's no way out, you know, like what piece of advice would you give them?
I would just ask them to take a chance on themselves and just show up and continue to show up. So for me, because my mind was so out of whack, I just knew that I had to keep my body where my body needed to be, because like soon my mind would follow. So I really wanted to leave at the Haven because I needed medication. I needed Suboxone. Mm-hmm. And I'd never been on Suboxone, but I went to the Haven. I was still high. They let me in. I was withdrawing while I was there. I was going crazy. I was trying to leave. And I just remember telling myself, like, just keep your body here. Like, you know, they're going to help you. You're going to get what you need, and you're going to be able to stay here and find a way to recover. So my advice would just be like, put your body where your body needs to be and just don't leave. Mm-hmm. Like, there have been so many times where I was like right around the corner of recovery and I left. Like, I quit before the miracle happened and I gave up on myself. It's like, yeah, just take a chance and know that like you're worth it. And like, you deserve a good life, and their story might be the exact thing that someone needs to hear at that time. Like, if I devalue myself and say like, what I have isn't good enough, my story isn't good enough, then I might be like robbing someone else of the opportunity to recover by doubting myself.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Amen. One last question before we leave, you know, how is the relationship with your family now, with your mom, your dad, everything else is going great?
Yeah. So everything is actually great. I mean, things are really good. So both of my parents are getting a little bit older. I mean, obviously,
yeah.
My dad lives in Sierra Vista. I see him about once a month and I talk to him regularly. So we have a good relationship. I remember seeing him one time and he was like, well, why can't you just quit? Like, you know, what's wrong with you? Why can't you
knock it off?
Yeah, basically. And I got really angry and I left. But we have, you know, rekindled our relationship. And he actually really adores Adam. He really loves Adam. And I just wanted to, you know, make sure that I recognize Adam. You know, he really has been a rock for me.
Shout out to Adam, man. We need to get you in here, bro. Hit me up, dog. Please. I need to talk with you, bro.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah, I'd have to. We'll talk about it. I'll see, you know, push okay. him off that, push him off the comfortability edge and,
okay.
and see what we can do. But yeah, he's really stood by me and he's been solid. And yeah, he's a great father to Evan and we enjoy our time together and we're just always trying our best. You know, we did get into a relationship in early recovery and like, it's hard. It is really hard to like be working through my life and what I have going on and him and what he has going on and be able to like, you know, continue our relationship because relationships are challenging.
Yeah.
And always, and to find the beauty and the peace with each other and just say, okay, like this is our lives and we're going to make the best of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With God, anything is possible.
That's
I mean,
right.
Matt says it all the time, you know, recovery is a tailored suit. So, you know, we have recommendations of like, you know, of course, rehab, romance. No. You know, you guys aren't going to be doing things like that. But, you know, it really is a tailored suit where certain things, you know, we've heard so many different types of stories and that just happened to be a part of your story and it happened to be a successful part of it.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, but I think it's kind of like a general consensus of like, yeah, when you're fresh off and like you have nothing to offer anybody else at
honestly,
this time.
Honestly, yeah. Like I still tell the clients that like, you know, I love him, but would not recommend.
Yeah. You know what I mean? That's funny.
Yeah, because it's challenging, you know, like the choices that I would make now and who I am now are like those are not the choices that like how I would have based my decisions whenever I was in early recovery.
Yeah.
You know, and like, yeah, I tell them all the time, like, get yourself together, have something to offer, you know, and then see what's going on. Yeah. My mom is good, just to wrap up, but my mom is good. She actually just quit drinking a couple months ago.
Amen. That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. So I'm really proud of her. And yeah, my son is amazing. I just adore him. And yeah, he's great.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Wish you guys could see her smile right now, man.
Yeah.
She's super happy thinking about it.
Yeah. He's amazing.
Well, thank you very much for coming and sharing your story.
Yeah, that's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. It's always refreshing to hear because, you know, like Buddha said, we sit with so many different people and I know you've heard them, but it's always, there's something that like when we wrap up at the very end, that's just refreshing of, you know, not everybody's story is the most ideal. And I think that's why we're where we are, you know, today is because we've gone through hard stuff, but then the light at the end of the tunnel is like hearing the positivity, seeing the smiles of where you've come.
Yep.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Life, I would not trade my addiction in some ways. Like in a lot of ways, I wish I didn't have to experience it. But now knowing that like I can live through every emotion that I have, I can sustain through life's challenges. Like because I have found a way to deal with my addiction that I get to live a life that I didn't know how to do that before.
Heck yeah.
I'm really grateful.
Heck yeah. Well, thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, please get up out your seat one more time. I'm going to hit the applause button. Give it up to Miss Katie. It's amazing. Thank you so much again. Sound like a broken record, but I'm very grateful that you came through and shared your story. For all of the listeners and everyone out there, please make sure to share this with a friend or a loved one, someone who could benefit from hearing a very powerful story. We thank you guys for tuning in. We hope you have a beautiful rest of your week. Much love. God bless. And we'll see you on the next one. Peace. What's going on, everybody? This is Buddha from the RCast, and I just wanted to thank you for checking out this week's episode. It means a lot, and if you could share it with a friend or a loved one, somebody you need in recovery, or maybe somebody who just needs that little bit of extra positivity in their life, we'd greatly appreciate it. If you would like to join us here on the RCast, either in the studio live or online, hit us up. The links are down in the show notes of this episode, and on there, you can find direct links to our main website here at America's Rehab Campus and all of our social media platforms. Follow us. We keep the posts positive and motivational, focused on recovery, health, and wellness. As you know, in this modern day and age, we need as much love as possible, y'all. And as always, if you or somebody you know is in need of substance abuse treatment, please don't hesitate to give us a call. We're open 24 hours a day, and our direct phone number is 1-833-272-7342. Once again, that phone number is 1-833-272-7342. I hope you all have a beautiful rest of your day. Much love and God bless. Peace.